It is odd. I'll ask an ordinary citizen about local regulations, the timing of garbage collection, the local parking rules, the planning regulations, and they will tell you they are daft. And they know. They have to deal with them in daily life. But ask the same people what is wrong with the world of banking, and they will set up a furious roar in favour of more and more regulation in the hope that this will bring bankers to their knees, if not to their senses. And it is this sense of generalised public outrage that politicians hear, and they set about creating regulatory structures and rules, not necessarily because they think it'll make things better, because it will, they think, assuage the public anger. And so it comes to pass that things do not get better, but they do get wrapped up in regulation. And for a while, the shouting dies down. This is the period of the setting up of regulators, a huge, expensive and cumbersome process. Back in 2011, a journalist looked into the massive undertaking that was the growing Dodd-Frank Act that was intended to bring comprehensive financial markets regulation to the US following the great financial crash. She found that it had already burgeoned to getting on for 3,000 pages. It required 243 new rules to bring it into law. 100 new committees had been formed to do this. Each one of these 100 committees were now issuing consultation documents several hundred pages long, asking questions about what they might do. And we all know what the result will be. The regulations will be so lengthy and complex that no one will be able to get a proper handle on them. Lawyers will spring up to add to the paperwork and confusion, and the people who are supposed to be regulated by this impenetrable forest of rules will employ an army of bright people to find the one tree in that forest which means that they can get around it all. Regulation, sadly, produces the exact opposite effect to that intended. In the UK, the EU Audit Regulation and Directive comes into force next July. And for months, the UK's Financial Reporting Council has been trying to enact it in such a way that would mean that the very useful principles on which UK corporate governance are founded are not undermined by a flood of regulation, if you can be undermined by a flood, which could overwhelm them. It seems ridiculous that we have such situations. But in a world, particularly in America, where the lawyers and the regulators have the upper hand, this is now the norm. Useful and valuable stuff is ignored. Interminable and unintelligible rules are treated with reverence. The result, in Europe, for example, is the Volkswagen scandal. Rules were seen to be there to be gamed. In America, the same is true on a vast scale in the financial world. The only way to tilt the balance back to principles rather than rules is to hope the public clamour for more and more rules dies down a bit. Certainly, there is a discernible shift. The other day, I was reading a review in the New York Times Review of Books of Other People's Money by John Kay, the wise and thoughtful Scottish academic, writer and columnist, who is best known for his report for the government a few years ago on how to counter short-termism. The book review was written by a hedge fund manager. Oddly, he got the point. This is how he expressed it. "The last third of the book insightfully addresses reform, which, refreshingly," Kay stresses, "is not the same as regulation," he wrote. "Some of finance's most abstruse and pernicious activity arises from regulatory arbitrage, restructuring transactions so that they move from a less favourable to a more favourable regulatory rubric. Moreover, financial regulation suffers from a faster spinning revolving door compared with other industries, with the regulators themselves either coming from or looking forward to landing in the industry they are supposed to oversee." That is the essence of the problem. But it's clear that holding the line between building a corporate culture based on principles and one which is made up of rules which are capable of producing, at best, unintended consequences, and at worst, potentially criminal behaviour, is becoming harder. So, where to start? opinions have to change. But that, amidst a world where shouting abuse counts for more than rational argument, is hard to bring about. R. Hedgie in the New York Times expresses it well in the review of Kay's book. Kay writes like an anthropologist, he says. The roots of finance's dysfunction, he says, are cultural. The ethos of an old-fashioned partnership of traders risking their own capital endured as a move towards public shareholding transferred both these risks and these rewards from the partners to the shareholders. In reality, it had little effect on the financial expectations of those who worked in the firms. Reform has to mean changing the industry culture, inculcating an ethic of stewardship and faithful agency, living the rhetoric of putting the client first, and changing industry structure where culture clash is insuperable. Once those sorts of view become mainstream, and a mere book review could be a sign that they are, then useful change will be on the way.